And so we started this just kind of a few months after Oculus. And we had some pretty good success with it. Like, we did a Kickstarter campaign. We did quite well with it. We built prototypes and we showed them publicly. We got a lot of excitement from investors. We raised $15 million, which at this time, everyone was getting so hyped up about virtual reality. It's like just $15 million just dropped on my lap, which sometimes too much money is a problem.
It's not good.
Especially being a first time founder. So here it is. Like, you think you've arrived. You know, I get $15 million dropped on me. I'm here. I've arrived. Well, you know, I learned a lot of lessons of what can go wrong and what can go right. We did a lot of really things right with Cast AR. Like, our product, people loved it. We got some of the kits out to folks. We ended up refunding all of our Kickstarter backers. We gave them all our money back because we had, like, our investors wanted us to go for a grander vision, like more of a magic leap. Grand, you gotta go big. Don't do the small thing, go big. And so, you know, our whole team got kind of sucked into this go really big and grand. And, you know, some bad things happened. The team got too big. We lost focus. We started going after every vertical market we could imagine. You know, instead of staying focused, we were like, let's do medical, let's do gaming, let's do education, you know, data visualization. I mean, it was just, we were encouraged to do everything. You know, when you chase after everything, you get nothing. And that's what happened is, like, let me back up. So just kind of to preface how we got into the state of how we were just going after everything. We received the $15 million. We spent the first 6 months to 8 months. We didn't spend very much of the money. And then our investors got very worried because there were companies like Magic Leap. You know, Google started making a lot of noise. Facebook started making a lot of noise. And they're like, you got to hurry. Like, if you don't get this product out in 6 months, it's over. You know, Google's going to, like, take over your business. You know, and so we ended up going big really fast and, of course, burning all the money really fast. And so that was a super valuable lesson. One of the other lessons too that I learned, you know, I was scared. First time startup, I didn't want to be the CEO. I was like, you know, I mean, I'll go hire someone to be the CEO. So one of the first things I did is I went out and recruited a startup CEO who was a really great CEO. He was from a lot of startups. He was really scrappy, you know, very cash conservative, and helped us raise that $15 million and got the kind of excitement going with the investors. And then 8 months into it, my investors came to me and said, like, it's time to upgrade your CEO. He's too conservative. He's trying to be too scrappy. This is the time to move fast. We know somebody. And so they brought in their CEO, and then everything went out of control at that point. And then so next thing I know, we've burned through all of our cash and we hadn't shipped our consumer product yet. We'd done a lot of work on it. And the company had to, like, close down suddenly. And I mentioned earlier, there was some, you know, I always try to do the right thing. Like, if things don't work out. And so there was, you know, some situations in the company where some people were going to get, you know, their last payment and some people weren't. So I did everything I could to make sure that, you know, out of the money that remained, like, as many people that deserved to get, like, payment got their payment. And it was really a tough time. And the executives that the investors put in did not care about doing that. And it was like, I felt really, really strongly about it. And I took, you know, I took a big cut, you know, gave up a lot of my money to try to make sure that happened. So I'm proud. I tried to do the best I could to like gracefully wind that down.
So you managed to land the vehicle properly than a crash landing.
Yeah, kind of a skid.
Yes. So when, before we start talking about Till 5, I hope you have time.
Yeah, I have plenty of time.
Yeah.
Sorry, my stories are so long.
No. It's great. It's great. It's so I was just putting together the thoughts when you were going through your stories. So I was just thinking, so should I do Jerry 1, 2, 3 for the when I roll out this thing? So it's good. It's more like for me, the last 1 hour of our discussion has been like listening to a TED talk. And taking people through the journey. So anyways, coming back to this thing before we get into Till 5, when any normal person or any person who is interested in business or have an inclination towards startups and they keep tracking what's happening around the startup industry, we get to learn and read a lot about investments coming in, and we were like, oh wow, they've got $100 million or say 50 million or say $5 million. It's like, wow, things are gonna be better from here definitely, and this company is gonna grow leaps and bounds. But actually when you look at it, along with money there comes a lot of other concerns and issues and challenges which are not easy to tackle if you're not really upfront and transparent and careful about the money that is coming in and the people that you are going to get involved in getting the money in. Since you have spoken a lot around that, what is the message that you have for the people around in the startup industry or who are just getting into a startup phase, who think that let's go out and get money in whatever possible way or from whichever investor is ready to invest in us. What is the things that they should be careful about?
Yeah, I think I have two or three things to say along that line. So the first thing is raising money is not as easy as one might think. And so be prepared to go through a lot of work to raise money. And money comes and goes in different levels of difficulty. You know, it might be easy to get a few $100,000 to get your company off the ground from friends and family, but you should be looking ahead, one step ahead, of like, how do I take that $100,000? How do I get $1 million or $1.5 million, whatever it takes to take that company ahead a little bit. And then the other thing is really think about what are your goals you're going to do with that money, and only raise as much money as you need to do that with maybe just a tiny bit of extra buffer, and stick to your guns. Like if going from $100,000 to get your company going to $1 million is to get a proof of concept going, like make sure that's clearly messaged to your investors. You know, don't promise anything more. Like if an investor is going to walk away because they're not happy with like that step, you know, in your business, you know, you don't want that money. You don't want it if they're not behind what that next step's going to be. You know, if it's from $100,000 to actually launching the product, that's amazing. That it's usually pretty hard to do, going from like a small amount of money to like kind of a modest amount of money. But it kind of depends on your business. If you're a hardware business, that's insane. You can't launch a hardware business on $1 million. But if you're a software company, maybe you can get a product out the door with a small step up like that. I think the other thing, and I touched on it, is too much money is bad. The way investors think about it is they give you this money, and this money comes from their limited partners, and their limited partners want to see success with that money in a reasonable amount of time. And so if you take too much money and you're not spending it fast enough to grow your business at a very fast rate, then they're going to encourage you to spend faster. And that's exactly what happened with me and CastAR. As soon as we got the CEO in there that wasn't frugal with money and just started spending money like crazy to try to scale the company really fast, you know, you go up really fast and you come down really fast. And that kind of, you know, when we start talking about what I raised for Tilt 5, you know, one of my biggest lessons was like, you know, messaging to investors, find the right investors and raise the right amount of money. I didn't raise as much money for Tilt 5 along the way, but I've been having more success with Tilt 5 along the way for various reasons, and I can talk about that in a bit.
Yes. So you were there for in Castar for say 2 years, 3 years. What was the time span you spent with Castar before winding it up?
It was probably 3.5 years or so, probably. Just about that. I'd have to actually go look at the dates, but it was one solid year before we raised the Kickstarter money. I mean, the venture money.
Yeah.
Give or take. And then it was about 8 months, moving too slow for the investors, 8-9 months. And then it was, you know, 6 months to 7 months. We were
great. And you somehow managed to keep the technology with you, and then you how did you do that? So because the investors would have thought of taking the technology with them, so how did you manage to keep the technology with you?
That was a very lucky story. Like, sometimes, you know, they say in startups, like, you know, you got to have a good idea, you know, the timing's got to be right, and you got to be a little bit lucky, right? You got to have those three things. Like, great product, wrong time, you know, you're not going to be successful. Great product, you know, right time, and you're not lucky, you know, you still don't succeed. So there's a reason only 1 out of 10 startups, you know, even remotely succeed. It's like, you just got to get those three things to line up. So when we did CastAR, we were in the middle of extreme hype. Everyone was VR, AR crazy. And you didn't have to be like very thoughtful to go raise money. And you didn't have to be very thorough about your business plan. So fast forward like 3 or 4 years, we're hitting the end of CastAR when things didn't go right. Now, virtual reality had gone into a huge slump. You know, the first wave of excitement was over, sales weren't great, and companies like Magic Leap were starting to come out with AR products. They were going to release them. Google was making a lot of noise. Facebook was making a lot of noise. So the environment for augmented reality was really bad at that point. And all of our technology went into auction. And so a group of us that were like, no, this product is so good, it solves all the problems. That's why we're having problems with the rest of the industry, is like, we've solved it. We got to like save this thing. So we pooled our money and we went into this auction process, which is this blind auction process, which is really weird, where you bid a certain amount of money, but you don't know what everyone else is bidding. But also, at the same time, being part of the company, I have the people considering buying the technology coming to me and asking me, you know, would you come back and support it? Would you be part of our team if we bought it? And, you know, tell me technically the pieces of it. And so I didn't have a lot of incentive to like go work for these different companies if they bought the technology. So some of the companies would come to me like, yeah, you know, if we buy this technology, would you come along with it? I'm like, no, like, I want to buy it. So It turns out that we ended up winning the auction. One of the companies that was going to buy the technology, I can't mention who it is, actually decided to invest a very small token amount of money in us to help us get going, because they're like, well, we could have just bought it, but if you're not going to come along, but we want to, like, we believe in it, here's put a tiny bit of money in to help you get going. So the first few $100,000 came from this company that was actually considering buying the technology, but they instead invested in our team.
Wow.
It was kind of an interesting situation. Like, at any point, we could have been outbid and we could have lost it, and it could have gone to one of the big companies. And
yeah, so that's where the luck part kicks in.
Yeah, luck. I don't know if it was wise, kind of wisdom. So let me back up. A very interesting thing happened to me just before a group of us decided to buy this technology. CastAR shut down. I was in the process of kind of wrapping up everything and making sure all the IP goes to auction. I get a random phone call from Nolan Bushnell, the founder of Atari, like the grandfather of video games. I like hardly even, like, does this guy even know me? Like, how, why is he calling me? And so he calls me up. He's like, Jerry, I've been following you. I've been following this project. I'm a big fan. He's like, having been the founder of companies that have been successful and companies that have crashed and burned really hard, I've seen it all and I've done it all. He's like, I don't know what the right thing to tell you to do is, but I just want you to know that if you want this thing to succeed, there's always a way. Just remember, there's always a way. And I'm like, oh my God, like,
wow.
There's always a way. Like, that was the thing I needed to hear from, like, this legend, like, that just took the time to call me. Like, wow. And so I started reaching out to my mentors and friends, and I'm like, you know, here's the situation. And, you know, Nolan Bushnell called me and he said, there's always a way. And one of my friends, he's like, you know, you can actually buy your own company back out of auction. There's no, just because you were involved with it doesn't mean you can't buy it. I'm like, oh, boom. So that's
superb.
Wow. Yeah, those are going to be memories that stick with me forever. And then, you know, and once I knew that I could buy it, then that kind of set me up to be like, well, then, you know, prior to that, like, well, maybe the technology will get purchased and maybe I can take some of my colleagues and we can go work at big company and on it. And changed our thought process. I went to everyone. I'm like, hey, should we do this? Like, it's going to cost us a lot of our own personal money to do this, but it's so good. We can do this, right? And we all rallied behind it. Like, we can do this. And, you know, we all like stood firm. Like when they asked us, like, would you come work with us? Like, nope, yeah. We're going to buy it.
Great. So I would say that the way in which you spoke about your computers made easy the transparency that you used to have, or rather you still have with your employees. I think that transparency that you had with the employees and the colleagues in CastAR helped you to stand firm in your decision. Otherwise, if half of your team would have said that we will come out and help the other competitor who is bidding for the auction, then they might have taken the product and walked off with that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, being transparent in your company has its downsides. And I've definitely seen that through the years of working at companies that aren't transparent and working at companies that are transparent. Personnel get upset sometimes. You know, if you're not transparent, all the engineers and personnel like stand around the water cooler and in the kitchen and they're like, what's going on? Like, you know, everyone's like inventing like scenarios and they're sometimes completely wrong. Sometimes they're completely right. And people get paranoid and it's really bad. On the flip side, you can be really transparent. like with my computer stores, I was very transparent. Like, we're running out of money. Here's the bank account. This is like, I don't know how I'm going to pay some of you next month. So we have to make some tough decisions, you know, and some people react really well to that, you know, and some are like, I'll take a pay cut. I will stick behind you because I believe in you or I believe in the product, and they'll stick around. Some are like, I got a family. I got to go. I'm out of here. And you lose some really good people in those scenarios. And that's kind of a downside of it. Or, you know, there's some, like, sometimes people get upset when you're transparent. You're like, we made this decision. I don't know what the decision is. And some people will disagree with that decision. You could keep it secret from them, but you made a decision as an executive in the company, and the personnel will get upset about it. But I think in general, you know, the more transparent you are, all the downsides of that, it's well worth it. And I think that's why, you know, as CastAR was crashing down, I had my core team, all my trusted people, we talked candidly, like, the executives, they're taking us in like this wrong direction, and it's out of my control. Like, you know, and I think that rapport and being honest with them is why they followed me, you know, to Tilt 5. We have quite a few CastAR people working at Tilt 5. You know, I think that's a testament to like how great the product is and how much, you know, they believed in the product. And I hope it's a testament that they believe in my like transparency and honesty with them. And with Tilt 5 this time around, my co-founder, Jamie, he says, like, I'm going to do this with you. I'll put a significant amount of money in, but you have to be CEO from here out. You can never let that go. You've always been the guiding light. You've been the visionary. You understand what this product can be. Like, not doing it if you're going to hire another CEO that's going to drive us off a cliff. And so that's, it really makes me feel good in it. I'm scared, to be honest. Like the whole, I'm constantly scared because it's like new being like the CEO of a company. But on the flip side, you know, being able to drive the company from the top, we are having so much more success than we did at CastAR because we're being a lot smarter. We learned a lot of lessons and we're being a lot smarter this time.
Great.
You know, some of the things we learned is like we spent, probably a year and a half before we took any serious amount of venture capital. We only took a small amount of money in very small steps. So we started with a few $100,000 that got us like 4 or 5 months worth of time. And we had a clear goal with our investors, like, this is going to happen. We're going to take the CastAR design and we're going to make it the Tilt 5 design. And we're going to make these improvements to it. And then we went out and we talked to the same investors, like, are you in again for a little bit more? And we're going to bring in some more investors. And we brought in a little bit more. Then we brought in, like, you know, total investment of, like, on top of that $400,000, this is going to bring us to $1 million investment. And with this money, we're going to learn how to, we're going to get manufacturing started and, you know, prove that we can build like a very small number of these at the quality that we need. And we're going to figure out how to market it. And we're going to go and do a Kickstarter campaign.
Great.
And so we spent a ton of time. We went really slow. We're like, all right, what went wrong at CastAR? Oh, well, we chased after every market at once. We tried to boil the ocean. We didn't have a clear message to the end consumer. We were just like riding the virtual reality hype train, and we were just assuming build it and people will come. And so, like, this time around, let's find a market. It may be small. Let's solve a problem. Let's solve one really solid problem, and it's got to be a problem where you can describe it very clearly to the customer. And so we thought about a bunch of different things, like, you know, our system can do a lot of things. It can do all these different vertical markets. It can do like education and data visualization and video games and this and that. And we eventually like narrowed down, like, what if we can take all the things that you love about board games and all the things that you love about video games and just mash those together and make it so that, you know, if someone doesn't know how to play a video game, but they know how to play a board game, they can play our system. Or what if they do play video games? They're going to love our system because it's got all the like fun pieces of video games. So it's like, so we found this message. Okay, yeah. Video games meet board games, like holograms popping out of the table, you know, play board games, play video games on the table with your friends. And we started working on this, like, how can we describe this succinctly? And we started to put a really, really scrappy marketing campaign together. And it was super challenging. We had no money. Like, I think by the time we got to our Kickstarter campaign, we had $20,000 or $30,000 left for marketing. So this was the Kickstarter campaign. We had planned it so carefully. Like, we're going to spend this time, and then this is going to be the biggest roll of the dice. Like, this Kickstarter campaign's got to work, or we're out of business. And we took all of our money. And actually, this is like, you know, I've never mentioned this publicly yet, but this was a testament to the personnel in the company. We had our choice of payroll for that month, or we could all go on furlough and take no money during that month of Kickstarter. We opted to take that money and put it into marketing instead. So thank awesome. You. It's awesome. And it's, so we did that. And our success on Kickstarter, we had clear message. People understood it. The press loved it. We showed the product to a bunch of people in the press. And we pretty much doubled what we did at Cast AR on this Kickstarter campaign. And we got this great momentum. People wanted to join the company. So we were able to like hire like really good people. You know, we continue to pre-sell units. People are still buying lots of units. And then so part of this, so after we did the Kickstarter, we're like, okay, we have to like build these units. We plotted that out in future, but we also have to raise money to kind of keep growing the company to get more, like there needs to be like more games. There needs to be more marketing. There's got to be, you know, more personnel to help make the product better. And so we took our time raising money and we worked on the product. We made the product better. We got it ready for manufacturing. And then COVID hit. Talk about scary. Oh my goodness. Like all our plans just went out the window.
So before we speak about people who are into gaming, I will not say into gaming, people who are in the augmented reality and the all the reality space, they have been following you and they know Jerry and the Tilt 5 campaign and the products around that. But people who don't know about this industry, there are still a lot of people who don't know about Tilt 5 and what actually Tilt 5 is all about. So mm-hmm. we'll have to talk a little bit about that. Before that, why the name Tilt 5?
Well, the name Tilt 5 is an inside joke amongst the original founding team. And I can't tell you because it's secret and it makes us laugh and we really like it. But part of the reason we wanted to go with a name like Tilt 5 is at Cast AR, we felt we never were really happy with the name. It happened. It just happened. It was attached to the name AR and then it became, VR, AR, XR, MR, there's all these things. You know, we quickly realized that we didn't like that we were attached to AR because we may not be doing AR in the future. And even at Cast AR, we're like, that was a mistake calling the company Cast AR because we may not be doing AR in the future. Like, it may be called something completely different in 20 years. So then when we started Tilt 5, we didn't even know the name of the company, but we had to incorporate pretty quick to buy the technology so we could transfer it to the company. So we sat around for days and days thinking about like, what are other companies called? You know, Apple, kind of a weird name. Google, kind of a weird name. You know, just a ton of companies have kind of weird generic names that aren't like tied to a particular industry. And we're like, well, let's do that. Let's do something that we can own completely. It's unique, makes us happy. And we'll always be happy about it because it makes us happy. And generic enough that if 20 years from now we're selling network routers, you know, no one will know the difference, right? And so that's what we came up with, you know, Apple. It can be anything in the future. You know, Apple made computers, now they make phones.
Yes.
Tilt 5 makes tabletop augmented reality gaming systems. You know, 5 years from now, we might be making space shuttles. Who knows?
Wow. Yeah, I hope you do that. Yes. Tell us more about Tilt 5 and what is it all about?
Well, Tilt 5 is really simple. Like, we have augmented reality glasses. So there are these, I don't know how many people are going to be watching by video or if this is a video chat, but here's these are the glasses. These are very lightweight. They're about 85 grams. They have folding arms. They're quite small. They're very easy to slip on and wear. You can put them on in just a matter of seconds because they're so small, not like these big headsets where you have to strap things on.
And I'll just pitch in. I think this is one of the lightest augmented reality glasses which is available in the market.
Yeah. And then, you know, we also have a second part of it is the control scheme, which is this wand. It's like a magic wand. And when you have your holograms on the table, the game characters, you can reach in with the wand and poke them with the stick. You know, a lot of times people make fun of our wand and they say it looks like a barbecue lighter, or, you know, they think it looks funny. And it's by design. It wasn't a mistake that we made it that shape. We're not silly. Like, everyone knows how to take something and poke at something. And that's the beauty of our system. Every angle, we are always thinking about how can we make it so easy that anyone can use it, a child and all the way to grandpa. And so we've added features like hand tracking where you can reach in and touch the holograms. We have our wand where you can stab things and pick them up and move them around easily. Everyone can do that. But we also have, like, for the gamers, we have joysticks and buttons. And so it has a feel for those that like video games. You can play video games on it too. But it comes back to this, like, the main objective, the way people are going to use our system is they flip open the game board, slip on the glasses, and plug them in, and then boom, the video game's just going to like spring right out of the table, and you're going to be able to like play it like immediately. And if you want to play with your friends, same thing, they just slip the glasses on. Now you have this shared kind of hologram space where all these like 3D characters that you can touch and move are all running around. Or if, especially in this COVID world where you can't get together with your friends, these game boards can be connected via the internet. So you can connect your 3D space with someone else's 3D space in their home. And as you move objects around in this 3D space, it moves simultaneously on their side as well. Plus, our headset has speakers and microphone built in, so you can just talk to your friends simultaneously. And it really does feel like you're in the same room together.
That's amazing.